Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the Hawks Talk Podcast. I'm Pat Boyle from NBC Sports Chicago. I am joined by Tracy Myers from NBC Sports Chicago.com. How you doing, Trey?
I'm good.
Doing great.
Dodging raindrops out there.
Yeah, dodging raindrops. The Hawks, they went from the desert to, well, they're still in the desert, right? Las Vegas, Nevada is where they are right now. After ending a two-game slide on Saturday night in Arizona. And the big story in that one, or one of the storylines, was the fourth line, the energy line. Yeah. Lance Boma, Tommy Wingles, and John Hayden played a huge role in that victory. Have you been impressed or surprised maybe from the production we've seen thus far?
Well, I like the way that line kind of meshes together. I mean, they go out there, they're smart. You know, we talked about Hayden's fighting and if he feels the need to do that, fine. I actually like when he doesn't, you know, just land the big hits instead. That's the thing. They've landed some very good hits.
Yes.
You know, so in that respect, that physical game has been outstanding. You see, you know, Boma coming through with the big goal. And in a stick tap to how good that line was, then they get thrown out there late, you know, when
yes.
they're trying, when they've got the empty net and everything. If anything ever in the Q handbook says, good job, here's your reward, it's that. And, I'm very impressed with what that line has been able to do in terms of what the Blackhawks need from it.
So Boma tallied his first goal as a member of the Hawks and picked up a helper for his first multi-point performance of the year. Wingles got his first goal, the empty netter, as the hockey gods were looking on after what happened to him on the penalty shot. He also picked up an assist for his first multi-point game since March 12th of 2015 when he was with the Sharks. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about this Wingles penalty shot.
Yeah.
Now, what I saw and I think what Joel saw was Wingles coming down. He makes the deke move on Domingue. Yeah. And the question is, does Domingue, with his paddle, does he touch the puck?
Yeah.
Or did he touch Tommy Wingles' stick? I saw it as stick.
Yeah.
Because I thought he was moving the puck to take it to the side. So basically it was Domingue's stick, then Tommy's stick, puck on other side.
Yeah.
Obviously the league saw it differently.
Based on what they sent to us, and just so everybody knows, you know, it's first of all, they post this on the NHL website / situation room for everybody to see. And we get word eventually, usually around the time that the game is going on. And what they rolled was that, yes, that it hit the puck, mm-hmm. The Domingue hit the puck. And then, so basically saying Wingles took a second shot, which you're not allowed to do. From what I saw, I disagreed also because I just saw it stick on stick. And what some people were asking on Twitter is, okay, they must have had a different angle or, you know, how could they? I said, well, you have to keep this in mind. It's not always just the angles from Chicago. You know, it's different camera crews for different teams or different outlets and what have you. A couple years ago, we were in St. Louis, and I'm trying to remember the details of this. I know Antti Raanta was in net, and I believe what it was a loose puck that St. Louis ended up knocking in. And people in Chicago were losing their minds because they said, no, it wasn't loose, he had it. Well, St. Louis had a shot of the puck just sitting loose right by his skate. And that was a perfect example of, okay, just because you don't see it in one market doesn't mean that that shot doesn't exist. Did that happen in this case? I couldn't tell you. Based on what I saw, I disagreed with the call, but there could be another angle out there that we did not see in this market.
And so that makes it twice that video replay has gone against the Hawks. I thought video replay went against them a couple of times last year. Yeah. I remember Hossa being involved in an onsides, offsides dispute. They were burned a couple times on what's goalie interference and what's not. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's my biggest thing right now. Like, I don't think, much like the NFL struggles with what's a catch.
Yeah.
You know, the process of the catch and all this sort of stuff.
The football move.
Yeah, the football move. Have you made a football move? I think the NHL is struggling with basically review because, you know, it's not clear always what they're going with. Yeah. Like we saw, like the Seabrook thing. Like he's laying on his back, sliding along the ice. That does not look to me like he's carrying a puck into the zone. May have gone off his skate, but he did not have, quote unquote, possession of it.
Yeah.
The thing you brought up, which I think, and I've heard Adam Bursch bring it up on pre and post, is, you know, the NHL needs to, when they explain what they are ruling on, take that opportunity, take the extra 10 seconds or whatever it is to describe to everybody that's in that arena and watching on television, hey, this is why it was offsides,
right?
Not just a, you know, it was rolled offsides, goal, you know, like, or no goal. And, you know, teach the audience, because there's a lot of people out there, ourselves included, who are around this game quite a bit, and we're confused about it.
Yeah, I said to somebody not too long ago, I said, listen, if Joel Quenneville, who has been playing slash coaching this sport for, you know, what, three quarters of his life,
right,
probably, is uncertain from game to game, what's going on, what counts, what doesn't count, then the rest of us are in trouble because, and some of these things, you know, especially with offside, there's a lot of gray area, you know, you know, you go back to the Seabrook one. I think the rule after the one that they posted actually explained a little better because that had more to do with deflections and stuff like that. The other one I thought had to do more with possession, which I didn't see him having. So, yeah, it's explaining things, and like I said, if you know, the explanation does eventually come down, it's on the websites. But yes, it would be nice. It's kind of like what they do in the NFL, where they say this happened. You know, he made the catch, then he was down, or whatever the explanation is. Just try and explain it as quickly as possible. Your Twitter version of 140 character
right.
explanations, as it were. But giving a little insight on this would certainly, I think, help everybody understand. Okay, this is why or why you didn't make the call.
Yeah, the other thing that I thought they got burned on a little bit last week or before the weekend was the hit on Ryan Hartman along the boards.
And nothing, past the minor, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, so because he bounced up right away, the referees aren't as inclined to be severe with their penalty on the ice, which is a joke.
I'm not a fan of that.
I mean, you know, that should not be, because at that point, we don't know. I mean, he doesn't, to be honest, doesn't know if he has a concussion,
right,
whether he bounces up or not.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing, the Hawks had just come off a 5-on-3, and you're maybe less inclined to have the team go on a 4-minute PK after you just had them on a 5-on-3.
Yeah.
Again, that should not factor. If you're trying to get rid of these hits, that was a dangerous hit. Here's the other thing. Okay, fine. Referees, they deemed it a 2-minute boarding call. How did NHL player safety not rule on it afterwards? You're dealing with a repeat offender too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I just, that was something that I was just like, the inconsistencies. They say they're trying to get rid of headshots and this and that, and like, okay, what was that?
Yeah, and you know, again, you know, the lining up the numbers and distance and stuff like that, that all of these criteria are things that have come into play on calls that they have made in the past. It's the natural inclination of, okay, what kind of injury. I don't believe that should be the end-all, be-all factor, or it shouldn't get as much weight as it does, I guess I should say. And even Coach Joe Quenneville, and I was kind of surprised at, you know, the way he responded to this. Not that he was grateful that Hartman was okay, because the first thing he said was, first things first, Hartman is okay, which is the biggest concern. And then he said after that, and he kind of trailed off, and it's like, okay, you kind of get past it. And I'm thinking that's part of the problem, too. If he's hurt, he's irate.
Right.
You should probably still be angry that one of your guys got lined up face first into the boards. And it goes back to the bottom line of, if you want to get rid of these hits, you just need to go on a textbook explanation, distance, numbers lined up, facing the boards, all this stuff. Little less credence to injury, because at the moment doesn't necessarily mean anything. Let's go back, and this is more concussion stuff than anything, but Patrick Sharp last year when he took that hit along the boards, there was nothing illegal about that hit. Just happening to got crunched along the board. He got cleared that night. So if let's say it would have been a suspendable hit or something that you would have looked at, he was perfectly fine that night in terms of otherwise his other than his neck hurting.
He passed the
next
baseline.
Day
yeah, okay, that's when it
is when everything started feeling worse. So that's why I say you have to be very careful about judging that moment.
Right.
You know, and I'm glad he went back for the concussion spotting, just as a side note, because you need to do that. I'm glad that he went back and everything like that. But just saying, okay, he got up right away. All right. That makes the hit not that serious or doesn't make it suspendable. If that's the way they were looking at it, that's part of disagreement.
And, of course, we're referring to the Cassian hit.
Yes.
On Ryan Hartman. And, you know, Cassian has had a history.
Took a heck of a knock from Domi the other night,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. So we move on to Hawks special teams playing a huge role in Arizona. Richard Panik scores on one of their two power play goals. Net front presence was the theme on both of those Hawks tallies. And then it was the penalty kill that went 5 for 5 on Arizona's power play opportunities, including 2 minutes of a 5-on-3. I mean, that to me was the game, right? I mean, that's what Joel usually says. The prior game, the Hawks had a 5-on-3, didn't cash in. This time, you know, they prevented Arizona from cashing in on a 5-on-3. It was the PK has been really good.
Yeah, and we were talking before we started this, you know, as much as I have been knocking the power play, legitimate reason, it's not good. I have to give full marks to the penalty kill because, as we remember, at the beginning of last year, I think it was the first 6 or 7 games.
Oh, yeah, brutal.
The numbers were atrocious.
And there was no way they were going to rebound from that.
No,
like,
no,
no. The rest of the year, like, the stats, like, it was like they let so many in in those 7-8 games that there was no turning back.
And if you would have had to have break away those 7 games and taken a different snapshot and everything, they were always going to end up around 26th in the league. There was nothing they were going to do about it. But this year, as of now, going into tonight's games, 85.7%, they are 6th overall. That is more like it. And I will say this to everybody, and I realize it'd be great to have a power play that's working because look at the personnel. There's no reason why it shouldn't. The penalty kill has always loomed larger when it comes to this.
Yeah.
You look back the last couple of years when the Blackhawks were winning, when the Kings were winning, when Boston was winning, their power plays weren't that awesome.
Right.
Their penalty kill was fantastic. And same with the Blackhawks. You know, in 2013, when everything was clicking, didn't they kill off something like 30 straight power play? Might have even been more than that. That, I think, weighs heavier. And you look at the games that they lost last year or put themselves in more of a bind from last year. So, no, as rough as a power play has been, PK has been better, whatever they've done on it.
Yeah, well, and kudos. Ulf Samuelsson is now spearheading the penalty kill. From what I understand, they've simplified it a little bit. The forwards don't do as much switching up at the top as the puck makes its way around the umbrella, if you're following me on that one. And let's face it, new personnel. I mean, they've got different guys out there and limiting the captain's minutes, trying to keep him fresher for the rest of the game. Although John was out there quite a bit. I thought he had a great game, by the way, in Arizona.
Yeah.
Taves was out there, I think, quite a bit during the 5-on-3. So kudos to the special teams unit, especially the penalty kill there. One area of concern, and this was brought up by our guy, the Cruncher, Chris Kamka. We had it for you on Blackhawks pregame live the other night. He brought up a stat on the shot attempt percentage, 5-on-5, over the last 9 years. So this takes into account shots on goal, shot attempts that were blocked by the opposition, and shots that you fired and missed the target. Entering the Arizona game, the Hawks ranked 26th out of the 31 teams.
So it's almost like they're treating 5-on-5 like their power play. They're waiting for perfection.
Right.
Never a good thing.
Right. So, I mean, the puck possession, which they has been their bread and butter, they clearly don't have the puck if they're not shooting it as much and they're ranked 26th. You look at the cup years and those years that they won it all, they were first in this department, fourth in this department, and second in the NHL in this stat. And then in the last two seasons, where we've seen the one and dones, 15th and 13th. So we've seen the puck possession go down in the last couple of years. Now, again, smaller sample size, ranked 26 through, what, 7-8 games, whatever it is, to this point. But do you see this as an area that, I mean, they can improve in dramatically? I mean, I don't think you're ever going to see a top five finish.
No, this is going to be like the PK last year, where it started low and it's going to take some time to work up. It may never, but the Blackhawks, the Blackhawks certainly know that how important that is. It's like you said, it's been their bread and butter for a very long time. So, you know, you look at the way the games have gone, and this goes part in, hand in hand with you know, how many you know, shots Corey Crawford has faced and Antoine Forsberg has faced. You know, the game in St. Louis up until late, you know, that ice just seemed tilted the entire time.
Sure.
How many times have we seen in a lot of these games so far this year, one and dones, and right back out, and you know, just not getting that zone time that we're just so used to seeing this team get over the years. So it's definitely something that they have to work on, because they know from their own history that that's what they need to be successful. So, you know, I do. How do you get back to that? You just go back to what worked for you, you know, and I don't doubt that they'll be able to do it, but yeah, I'm surprised that it's been as skewed as it has been early. Yeah.
On Saturday night, I believe it was 29 shots apiece, but prior to that, the five games prior, they were outshot and outchanced in all of those games. And again, it then comes down to goaltending. If you're getting outshot and outchanced, the high danger area shot attempts that we talked about on the last podcast, Corey has been fantastic. He's allowed two goals or fewer in five of his seven starts this season. Just making the key saves. You know, I always kind of try to evaluate, too, like how much movement you see in the crease or added movement. Mm-hmm. It's not. The economy of his movement is something to watch. Like, doesn't ever lose the net as he makes his way, where like 3-4 years ago when he was starting out, there was more of that drifting that you would see as he was making adjustments in the crease. His economy of movement is something to watch.
He mentioned that heading into the season that there's always little things you're working on. I think the movement, I'm with you. I've noticed that right away. The glove, you know, the glove that used to be the the bane of his existence is much better. But as far as the movement, the one thing that I always was, you know, kind of caught your breath on was, one, if he left the net to get the puck, don't do it.
Right.
And also, you know, if somebody was attempting a wraparound, I always thought that he overcorrected too far to one side, and then when he, you know, slid over, it was always too late. So whatever he's doing, it's working. You know, there's been a lot of times already this year where the Blackhawks, to a man, have said, you know, thank God for Crawford, or thank goodness for what Forsberg's doing tonight, because they've been keeping them in games. That's all you ask your goaltenders to do,
right?
Is to keep you there, and those two have held up their end of the bargain.
Yeah, as Q said the other day, it was like we've been spoiled, and they really have. The Hawks have been in Vegas since late Saturday night, so they get that victory against the Coyotes. They make their way to Las Vegas, and again, they don't play till Tuesday night. This team, though, plenty of veteran leadership.
Yeah.
No concern for them enjoying too much of the nightlife, right, on the Strip?
I wouldn't think so. Yeah. You know, I mean, these guys, and I know, you know, being the longtime traveler on the circus trip or the ice show trip, there was always a stopover in Vegas at that time. And they knew what, you know, they these guys know what to do. It's like, okay, you had one night of fun, and then after that, you got to shut it down and get back to business. You know, you can go to Vegas and July if you want to and have a good time. So no, I don't worry about it. Look at how many of these guys are, you know, married with kids, and maybe they're getting sleep now. Probably not, never mind. But I wouldn't worry about those guys in this situation. Most of them, if you've been with this team for any amount of time, you've been to Vegas several times, and you know that this is more of a work trip, and that's the way you treat it.
As you take a look now, they're going to take on the Golden Knights Tuesday night, which you can see on NBC Sports Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
The Vegas Golden Knights have been the surprise of this young season.
Six and one.
You know, they start just a few days after the shootings. James Neal, Riley Smith have led the way in points. But right now they've got an issue in net.
Yeah.
It's you've got Malcolm Subban is expected to miss 4 weeks with a lower body injury.
Mm-hmm.
And Marc-Andre Fleury was placed on injured reserve with a concussion on October 15th. So Oscar Dansk will be expected to start Tuesday night against the Hawks. And then they recalled a backup for him from the Chicago Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in a tough spot, Vegas, with now their third and fourth string goalies on the bench and in net.
Yeah, and I, first of all, full marks to Vegas for, you know, everything that city's gone through. And you know, what they've done on the ice doesn't solve anything. It doesn't bring anyone back. But just to have those few games and something to cheer about, I think it's got to help, I would hope. But here's the thing. Not to be devil's advocate and poo-poo on the parade here. And somebody brought this up, and I didn't notice it until then. Most who they played so far, I think they played Buffalo once or twice. They've played Arizona.
Twice.
Some of the teams they're playing are not so great. They really haven't been on the road to any degree yet.
Right.
So a couple things that I'd like to see once they get going, what happens. Great start, though. But no, I was joking with you before we started this. You know, I wondered if somebody from Vegas was going to call the Blackhawks and inquire about Berube, who's coming off a shutout last night, if I recall. They're probably in this situation where, you know, you're looking for some depth at goaltender. I mean, it's a problem of a lot of teams, not just an expansion team. Again, it goes back to the Blackhawks being spoiled, but it's going to be very interesting. The Blackhawks are going to be facing a third string goaltender. And they better proceed accordingly. You better be peppering this guy. If you want to get those puck possession numbers up, this is a game that you should do it.
Yeah, and, you know, when you go back to the offseason, the acquisition of Anton Forsberg in the Panarin-Saad deal, it obviously, for obvious reasons, did not get marquee attention because of the other two guys involved in the deal.
Sure.
But part of the they obviously knew that Scott Darling was exiting stage right, and that they needed to have a viable backup.
Yeah.
And while he didn't have a ton of experience in Columbus, you know, I think his team did win the Calder Cup.
When Lake Erie Monsters.
So you know, he had some of the AHL cachet that would show his pedigree, maybe translating to the next level. He's been good so far. Again, two starts. He hasn't got a win, but it hasn't been his fault. He's picked up 2 points for this team, getting those games to overtime.
Yeah, and I've really liked what he's done, and he's, you know, he's bonded with Crawford and he and Jimmy Waite and everything, and he's taken advantage of, you know, any late practice work he's getting, any late morning skate work he's getting, because as a backup goaltender, that's what you got to do. And the schedule, it's been busy to a degree, but it hasn't been busy enough where they're going to pull Corey outside of the back-to-backs right now. And they've got a couple days here and there where they can get Corey some rest. But when they have brought him in, again, you just need him to give you a chance.
Yep.
And he more than gave them a chance. Edmonton was struggling coming into this building a couple days ago. Blackhawks couldn't generate anything, you know. But the guy has been right there. I like how he's kind of ingrained himself. He knew Brandon Saad and Artem Anisimov, of course, from his time in Columbus, so that certainly helped having some guys that he already knew. But, once again, if this works out, Stan Bowman, goalie whisperer.
Yeah, and give credit to Jimmy Waite, right? We thought when Stefan Waite exited.
Just don't stray too far.
Keep your book here, give it to your brother. Let's end this thing on a feel-good story of the week, and we've been chronicling this quite a bit in our podcast, Eddie Olczyk and his battle. It was amazing to see him in St. Louis on Wednesday night. You were there for that.
Yep.
To see that building, hostile territory, to give him that kind of ovation. And then, you know, you were at the, I mean, he was in, you know, postseason form with Doc. And then he comes back and does the game Thursday night with Pat Foley. Mm-hmm. Boy, that was awesome to see, Trace.
Yeah, as far as St. Louis, hats off to them for that. It's our reminder that, you know, no matter what your allegiance is with teams and everything, we're all human at the end of the day, and you can appreciate a good person trying to beat a very ugly thing. And so, you know, good to St. Louis to putting him on the Jumbotron. That was awesome. I talked with Eddie before everything, you know, during morning skate on Wednesday down there. And he was talking about how he couldn't sleep the night before, but it was for a good reason. He was so excited to do that. It's normalcy for a guy who hasn't had much of it over the last couple of months. And it's getting back into a routine that not only he knew that he loved. And so, as he said, and he told us all, this was the best medicine I could have. And the mental side of that has got to be as important, if not more so, when you're fighting something like this, is keeping the right attitude. So anytime he can do this and get that, you're not forgetting what you're going through, but maybe just kind of putting it off to the side for a little bit. It was great to see him. And everybody thought so, too. Just great reception in the
air. Hockey's a family, right?
I mean,
and we talked about this before, like how many times he and Pat have extended, you know, well wishes to somebody. You know, this thing is coming full circle. He had his fourth round of chemo today, mm-hmm. as we taped this on Monday. And, you know, it's like the 3 or 4 days after having it that he tries to get through. And the last two rounds have been better than the first one. So the nausea and all that, things are getting better. He loves the well wishes, the prayers. You know, hey, keep it coming, and we will keep you posted what we hear about Eddie Olczyk and when he'll return. Again, the schedule this week, the Hawks are in Vegas Tuesday night. That is a 9 o'clock Chicago start. We'll be on the air at 8:30 with pregame live, Adam Burrish and myself. Friday, Nashville. They'll take on the Nashville Predators on the west side. 7:30 start on NBC Sports Chicago. We will have an hour-long extravaganza pregame show beginning at 6:30. Following night, they're in Colorado to take on the Avalanche. We'll also have that for you on NBC Sports Chicago. So next two games, all right here on the Blowtorch NBC Sports Chicago. Thank you for listening to the Hawks Talk Podcast. Thanks to Tracy Myers, as always.
Thank you.
And we will catch you next time on the Hawks Talk Podcast.